Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 30th, 2017. This is episode 1385. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Upside, the smart new way to save big money on business travel. Visit Upside.com, enter the code TechGuy, and you're guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. You get the idea. All that stuff with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Let me give it to you again, not so fast. 8888-ASK-LEO, or maybe easier to remember, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Give us a jingle, give us a holler, ask a question, make a comment about tech or a suggestion. Golly, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to technology. Our world is changing around us, and that's really what this show is about, is kind of documenting the changes. Hollywood's all abuzz. Actually, I'm curious what you think about this. Hackers broke into the London post-production facility, I think last fall, where many great TV shows that you know and love are produced. The hacker Dark Overlord, probably a 14-year-old boy. Did I say London? I meant Larson. I don't know where the Larson Studios are. Probably Hollywood, right? Larson Studios, they broke in late 2016. And apparently were able to find on the servers copies of TV shows that were being worked on at the time, including Orange is the New Black, the new season. Orange is the New Black is an original production for Netflix. The new season 5, is due out in June. And Netflix says this is, of all the things they do, the most watched show. And fairly important for their revenue. A lot of people subscribe to Netflix so that they can watch Orange is the New Black. So, the Dark Overlord. I think if you have a hacker name that is that pompous, the Dark Overlord, you're probably 14. I'm thinking. Anyway, the Dark Overlord broke in. I know. Foolish to mock hackers. The Dark Overlord broke in and apparently also got unreleased shows from ABC, from Fox, from National Geographic, and from the IFC, the Independent Film Channel. Then they contacted Netflix and said, We have your show. If you do not pay us a ransom, we will release it, and you will suffer. I am the Dark Overlord. Netflix just ignored him. Netflix just ignored him. As I think absolutely the right strategy. Just, yeah, right. You know, so go do your darndest, Dark Overlord. So they did. So the Dark Overlord posted him on Saturday with a message that is the most ridiculous, over-the-top, silly message I've ever at least it was grammatical. So maybe it was a 15-year-old. I don't know. It didn't have to be this way, Netflix. You're going to lose a lot more money in all of this than what our modest offer was. Not so grammatical. I take it back. Get this one. We're quite ashamed. We're the royal we. We're quite ashamed to breathe the same air as you. We figured a pragmatic business such as yourselves would see and understand the benefits of cooperating with a reasonable and merciful entity like ourselves. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The Dark Overlord has spoken. They also went on to say, and to the others, there's still time to save yourself. Our offers are still on the table for now.
Wow. Gotta be a kid, right? That's not an adult. An English speaker, I would say native English speaker. It's idiomatic, but it's, you know, it's a. I'll give him a B plus. Redline it. Say, do your research, and maybe you should choose your pronouns more carefully. In any event, I don't. We'll see. I don't. I here's the thing. Here's what I would say to all of you, whoever you might be, who say, oh, good, now I don't have to subscribe to Netflix. I'll just download the first 10 episodes. They didn't get them all, even. Of course, the last three episodes of all of these series are the most, you know, exciting. That's why when Netflix or HBO or anybody else airs those last few, they go, only two episodes remain. Find out what happens in the thrilling, gripping conclusion. So if you are tempted, and I can't even imagine there's even one person who's tempted to cancel their Netflix subscription because now you can download BitTorrents of the Orange is the New Black 1 through 10 of the new season. You might reconsider. Why should we give the Dark Overlord anything at all? The Dark Overlord. You don't want to encourage this kind of kid behavior, right? I think, in fact, if you're not a subscriber to Netflix, I'll tell you what I did yesterday. I upped my subscription. Netflix has two tiers now. They have a 1080p, and they have, for a couple bucks more a month, a 4K subscription. And I thought, you know, even though I only have, I only watch a few things that are 4K, I'm going to pay for the extra $2 just to show Netflix that I support their stance against the Dark Overlord. Ridiculous. Anyway, this is going to be, it won't be the last time this kind of thing happens. This is the problem. It's very difficult to secure your servers, your internet-connected servers, against determined attack. Doesn't even have to be sophisticated attack. It just spear phishing is the key. That's what they call it. When you're targeting, when you're going after a specific target, it's a lot easier. When you're going after Sony Pictures Entertainment or Larson Productions or whatever, it's easier, because what you do is you send an email that looks like it comes from the boss, or it's easier to craft an email if you're aiming at a particular target. You can use names, locations. You can make it feel more realistic. And by the way, if I'm sure Larson was mostly using Macs. Don't think you're any safer if you're using Macs. We're starting to see spear phishing and phishing attacks on Macs. In fact, there's a new one that just came out called Doc. That's a Mac phishing attack. Checkpoint Technologies discovered DOK. It comes as, what do I always say? It comes as an email attachment with a file called a document, DOKUMENT. Currently, it's hitting European users. It won't be long before it comes here. And by the way, no antivirus on the Mac side detects it. Yeah, I'm sure they will. The problem is, and this is why we don't really talk about antiviruses that much, as soon as the antiviruses update to look for Doc, something else will come along, a modified Doc, that is invisible. When you download the attachment called document, document.zip from the email, copies itself to the Mac, displays a false message saying, oh, the file can't be opened, it's damaged. How many times have you seen that, right? That's no cause for alarm. Then it runs, it executes, sends another pop-up message that says, hey, you've got an update for your Mac software. And click update all. And then, right, we've seen that. You would probably respond to that. And then it says, oh, you need to please enter your password to continue. And then when you enter your password, Doc infects your Mac. The thing that's interesting here is it's signed. They forged the signature. So the app, a Macintosh, even if it's got, it's got Gatekeeper turned on, which prevents the installation of unsigned apps, it won't wake up. So Apple does not, it's going to be difficult for you to detect this. Don't open attachments, okay? Leo Laporte, Meet that guy.
And, you know, I would say don't open an attachment called document with a K is .zip, but next, you know, tomorrow it'll be document with a Z. I mean, you know, it's easy to change that. The Dark Overlord is at work.
Hi, this is the Dark Overlord. I have all the episodes of Twit for the rest of the year on a hard drive. And if you don't ransom them off, I'm going to release them.
That's actually a good idea. Yay! I know. Yay! That's a good idea. Why don't we do that and put it in a honeypot and let them do that? Then I can go home.
Oh,
then we have to make them.
Yeah.
I mean, be bitter. The Dark Overlord. Hello. Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah.
The bitter.
We don't have to. We don't have to work.
Let's watch the go, letters.
Yeah. See how the year ends. Go ahead, Dark Overlord. Do your worst. Dark Overlord. No adult would, you know, that's not, that's a kid. Would have that, would name themselves the Dark Overlord.
Hi, I'm the Dark Overlord. Oh, yeah. I'm the Dark Overlord and I've got your stuff. I'm going to release it if you don't give me $1 million. $1 million.
Having a fine beverage, a little Soylent. Hey, Doc Overlord, come on. You can steal my stocks of Soylent. I've hidden them in a special place. Why do you not think it's a kid, Mike B? I know, I'm surprised that that Orange is the New Black is their number one show, too. House of Cards. Gosh, they have so many good shows. Stranger Things, that should have been number one, right? But Orange is the New Black has been going on for a while.
Gollum.
No, Gollum is clearly an adult name. If no 14-year-old cult is going to call himself Gollum. Or Loquacious One, or Bad Pun, or Boneless Chickens. No, they're going to call themselves the Dark Overlord. There's an exact inverse to the pomposity of the name is a direct is directly inverse to the age of the hacker. Oh, yeah. I hope the Dark Overlord's listening, Mike B. We'd love to be a target of the Dark Overlord. Yeah, that's actually a more relevant story. I find your lack of faith in the Dark Overlord disturbing. No, I didn't, Gary. Good. I've read the book. I read most of the book. I didn't finish it. Oh, Mike B. You're giving the Dark Overlord far too much credit. Leo Laporte. The tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Hey, that's the phone number. I bet you people are calling. Let's find out, though, because Kim Schaffer is here answering the phones. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
I hear you're going back to the Bahamas.
I am.
Does that mean your Instagram will be and Facebook will once again be loaded with pictures of you enjoying the good life and making me suffer?
Yeah, pretty much.
You're going to swim with the pigs?
That's on another island, but we might try to get over there.
Pig swimming.
It's quite a trek.
Stay away from Fire Island.
We're not going there.
You're not going to the Fire Fest?
No. Oh, God. I heard about that.
Isn't that wild? Wild.
Those people showed up to broken down tents.
It was a deserted island with no infrastructure.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
They thought they could do a rock festival there.
Didn't work out.
No. You know, the reason, I think the reason that it's getting so much attention, really,
is a little Schadenfreude in the populace, because this was a
rich
person rock festival. You know, it was gonna, you had to fly in by private jet, and the ticket prices ranged from $1,000 to $500,000, and it was rich people.
Nothing.
Right. Nothing.
Nothing.
What if they threw a Burning Man and no one came? That'd be funny. So, you have been answering the phones, I think.
Yes, and we've got Jim in Bend, Oregon, who just got, I think, the new S8. And he got some information on it from the seller, and he doesn't know that that's accurate and wants to check with you.
Let's go to Bend. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Kim.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. What you were saying, I bought a couple of those S8 phones, and when I was transferring info from my old phone to the new one, the fella at AT&T that was helping me said, you don't need to transfer malware bytes, and the new phones, these phones don't need any virus protection.
Yeah.
It didn't sound right to me.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I would never recommend any antivirus for smartphones, because antivirus is of dubious value even on a desktop computer. And on the smartphone, they're less so, because the Android and iOS were designed in much more recent era when, you know, viruses were understood, and they do plenty of things to protect you. For instance, on all phones with Google's Android operating system, the software you download is scanned automatically by Google before you download it. You'll notice on these Samsung phones, Samsung did a deal with Lookout. It's a lot like the old days when you'd get an HP computer that had McAfee on it. First thing I do is disable Lookout as well, because Lookout is essentially it's redundant. It does the same thing Google's already doing. So you don't need to take any extra precautions. The only real precaution on any Android phone really comes down to two things. First of all, only buy Android phones from companies that pledge, that commit to promptly push the monthly security updates from Google. Now, I also have a Galaxy S8. I got the S8 Plus, also got it from AT&T. Disabled all the, you know, AT&T stuff I could. Disabled Lookout. Did not put malware bytes or any other antivirus on there. However, I was very pleased when a couple of days after I bought it, I did get an update that was the latest security update. So it's updated through April, which is very good. We'll watch with interest to see if that continues. There should be a May update in June, just like Windows. If that's the case, that's the only other thing you need to do then. You know, you want to buy, I guess, you know, in the first part, you want to buy a phone from a company that says, yes, we're going to make sure those updates get pushed out, and from a carrier that says we won't get in the way of them. Sometimes Verizon and others get in the way. And then secondly is just be careful what you install from the App Store. There has been, and there still is, malware discovered in the App Store. There was just a bunch of malware discovered the other day. Usually it's kind of the junky apps that you're not going to download. It's not Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. In this case, the most recent plague was from game guides. You know, if you search for a well-known game, you search for Clash of Clans, you'll find Clash of Clans, the real game, but mostly you'll find Clash of Clans add-ons, Clash of Clans cheats, Clash of Clans. Boy, I had to pick Clash of Clans. Huh? I couldn't have picked Ebony or something. Clash of Clans reference guides. And in fact, that's what the new and they've been all blocked from the App Store. But people who had downloaded these reference guides to games might have been bit. So just don't get stuff from shady sources. Stick with the mainstream apps. And then Android is perfectly secure. It's nothing to worry about if those two things are in the case.
Sounds good. Okay? Do you have time for a second quick question?
Yes, I do. But first, let me ask you one. How do you like your S8?
Oh, I love it. I got the Plus for my wife and the 8 for me, and I love the screen. Everything about it is so advanced over the other ones, like you were talking about earlier.
I love the bezel-less design. I mean, they really use that whole front for the screen almost, and it's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, good. I'm glad you like it.
I like going on sites, you know, that are interesting and usually have other viruses and stuff on them. And I use that Spy Hunter 4, and I really have found it removes a lot of stuff. And all the comparisons with, like, PC Medic and Malware Bytes and things, they never compare against Spy Hunter 4, and when I run both of them, it finds so much more than they do. Do you have any opinion on the quality of those?
It's a little self-serving when a antivirus announces, look at all the stuff we've found, especially if it finds more stuff than the other guys. Then there's some question about whether it's finding real things or fake things. The Spy Hunter 4, which comes from Enigma, is anti-malware. It's on the order of malware bytes or, you know, any of the big name antiviruses. I'm going to reiterate my advice. Even on the desktop, it's foolish to rely on an antivirus. In fact, I don't recommend antiviruses for two reasons. One, it gives you false hope. Remember, I was, you know, just talking about this document thing on the Macintosh. No antivirus hits it. It finds it. And that's really the case. Viruses spread so fast now, they spread before the antivirus is updated. It can't be updated fast enough, which means you're going to get infected. And so many people do what you just said you do. You go to sketch sites because I got an antivirus. That's really a mistake. And the antivirus has given you false confidence. The other problem is that increasingly we're seeing antiviruses be vectors, doors open to malware. And that's because in order for an antivirus to work on a desktop operating system, it has to hook in at a very low level. And so virus authors say, oh, I don't have to do so much work. I'll just hook into McAfee or Norton, and I'll use the fact that they're already in the kernel to launch my attack. So over the last year, we've seen at least three different antivirus programs be used as a front door to bad guys. In other words, two things. It gives you false hope because it doesn't work. And two, it's actually making your machine less secure. I'll add a third one. In many cases, it makes your machine less reliable and causes problems. Almost always, the first thing I do when somebody's having a problem getting online, I say, is disable your security software. Don't waste your money on antiviruses. They don't help. Practice safe computing. And when we come back, I'll give you the six things you need to do to keep yourself safe. The antivirus isn't in the list. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, we got Johnny this hour?
Yes, sir. Johnny Jet.
Just checking.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Johnny?
Good.
How was your day yesterday?
Good. I was in Connecticut. I flew back last night. My goddaughter was having her first confirmation, so I flew out for that.
You're so family-focused. That's so nice.
And I got to see my niece and nephews, jump on the trampoline, and...
Yeah, you come up to our way. You can jump on our trampoline. We got one of them new springless trampolines.
Really?
It's all the rage. Well, instead of springs, it uses steel. And it's got, so this trampoline all around it has about 50 steel springs that hold it. Not springs, but leaves. You know, it's a leaf spring that holds it. And that way, it's better.
You don't get stuck in between.
Well, you don't.
Like
yeah.
I used to when I was a kid.
You absolutely don't get stuck in the springs. Let me see if I can find it. Lisa, we've gone through a couple of trampolines. And so Lisa said, "All right, that's it. I'm going to get a good trampoline this time. I can't remember who the make is. Let's see. There it is. It's the Vuli Thunder. There it is. It's this one on the right here.
Okay. So, I've seen that.
Yeah. So it looks a little funny. It looks like a mushroom because it doesn't have springs down here. It's got leaf springs. I think this is the one she got.
I know. I have not seen that one.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the one she got. It sure looks exactly like the one. I'll tell you, assembly is a challenge because it took four strong people. I know I was going to say men, but it turned out it was more than men. Lisa was in there too, because you have to bend these steel things into the thing, and it gets it really taut. See,
wow,
yeah. I'm not sure I'd put your Toyota on it, but I guess he's gonna. That seems kind of crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, you must really get some cool. serious height on that.
Yeah. It actually makes me nauseous. It makes me a little. Oh, come on. No, don't do that. It looks like it's already wrecked. It looks like they dropped it once too many times. All right. Drop the car on the trampoline. Is it going to bounce?
Oh, it's got to bounce.
They're just going to put it on there. Boing.
It's bouncing.
Yeah.
Not really.
Look at that. It holds a car. Now, they say don't put more than 200 pounds on it, so I don't know why they're doing that. But
don't put more than 200 pounds?
I think so. I can't remember what the... No, maybe
I weigh 200
300 pounds, maybe. 400.
Yeah.
Don't put a car on it.
Yeah. I'll tell my brother about that one.
Well, he already has one. I don't... But if that one rusts out
His springs are weak. I was like, I can't even do a flip on this thing.
Yeah, well, you could do a flip on this. You get like 6 feet. That's why they have the net around it. It's even got, I mean, you can get some real height. I could do a flip on it and look at me. So, you know, it's, yeah, yeah.
Well, now they have the guard to go around it, which is awesome.
Yeah, the guard is good.
I used to fly into the woods.
Of course, you go off it.
I don't know how I managed not to break every bone in my body.
I know. He's Johnny Jet. He's a traveling guy. He travels the world, keeps track of all that stuff, and then gives us his feedback right here, telling us how to use technology to travel better. And a good day to you, Johnny Jet, on a Sunday. What were you yesterday? You were busy with family matters back east.
Yes, I was in Connecticut, and actually the day before I went to the Freddie Awards in New Jersey.
Is that the big travel awards, the Freddies?
No, it's for all the airlines and hotels, all the reward programs.
Oh.
And so, you know, if you went to American's homepage for, you know, last month, right on the homepage, it said, please vote for us for the Freddies, which is why I think they won the program of the year for airline in North America, which I don't agree with it. But
who has the best? Actually, that's a really good question. Who has the best?
Well, you know, it all depends on where the person's traveling to, you know, what routes you're taking, where you want to go with your miles. These days, to use your miles is next to impossible to use them at the lowest amount. Now you have to pretty much use double miles, fly on Tuesdays or Wednesdays or Saturdays. But, you know, everyone says Alaska Airlines is the best right now because they offer 1 mile per mile flown instead of the other ones are offering, you know, per dollar spent.
Okay. That's how it used to be, didn't it? 1 mile per mile?
It did.
Yeah,
but then, you know, all the board members, they all have cut back. The only one that hasn't now is Alaska Airlines. So, they're the ones that are, you know, they should have won that award, in my opinion.
Well, it's votes for this?
There was over 11 million people voted.
So it's flyers.
It's travelers. Yeah. It's, you know, people all over the world, actually. They said the number one country that voted was from Argentina, which that shocked me.
Wow.
And then Russia.
And did United win anything for, like, you know, best
beating people
best
up,
best customer dragging? Or actually, United has settled, I saw, in an undisclosed amount, which I imagine was fairly hefty.
I have no idea, but I'm guessing at least $10 million.
Yeah. Wow. And more importantly for us, Dr. Dow's happy about the settlement, but more importantly for us, they've changed their policy, including doing what Delta did, which is raising the bump. The maximum bump fee, what, $10,000?
They went $50 more than Delta, so they're up to $10,000. But no one's ever going to see $10,000 because people are going to get off at $5,000
exactly.
or $4,000.
I mean, that's a lot of money. This was, I thought, very important. In fact, I'm thinking maybe I'll reconsider my decision and not fly United ever again. They said we will not bump anybody who's already seated. Once you're seated, you're in the plane.
Right.
And I like that.
A lot of good came out of this.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. And it's why I'm, you know, it's one of the things, that the technology angle on this is there's cameras everywhere now. Everybody's got a camera phone on them. There, you can't get away with anything.
No.
Because
that's why all these incidents have blown up because their cameras are rolling.
Yeah, this
still happened back then. It just people didn't know about it.
Started, you know, it's the 25th anniversary of Rodney King in L.A. And it started with Rodney King because of camcorders. And that's a good thing, I think. You know,
For sure.
Yeah. So
keeps people honest.
Yeah. The airlines now are, I think, going to treat their passengers a little bit better when it comes to bumping, and that's a good thing.
Well, I think the airlines are going to have to install cameras in the cabins, yeah, just so they
competing points of view.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You have your video, but look at our video.
Right. So we'll see. But if you want to relive the golden age of travel, I did this last week, and I don't know if you saw it on my Facebook page, but I tweeted it.
I did.
Go to panamexperience.com.
This was the coolest thing ever.
It really is. So, you know, they're sold out through July, but they do it's fine dining every other weekend. But you're on an old 747. They have, you know, 15 flight attendants, and they're reliving the Pan Am days of first class. So you're having Chateaubriand, all the alcohol is included, and it's just a lot of fun. I wrote about it. I just tweeted about it.
There's a great article at johnnyjet.com. It's so cool. The flight attendants are wearing the classic Pan Am outfits, and they come on, and the pilot. There's even pilots, right? And now this guy, what did he do? He recreated a 747.
He bought an old 747 from the Mojave Desert, brought it to his house in Redondo Beach, the lower part, and then he partnered up with this guy who's a big Hollywood prop master.
Oh.
And they went to the valley. They added an upper deck. And now this is where they film almost – they have a bunch of planes there. And this is where they film pretty much every TV show or movie that has an airplane scene in it, including Bridesmaid, that hilarious scene on the plane. Yeah, also, the show Pan Am was filmed there.
Ah.
Pretty much everything is filmed there.
So it's a movie set, in effect. You're on a movie set. But then they add all the creature comforts.
And they have really good food. It's a four-hour experience.
Well, there's a difference from the
right here.
Yeah, they fake cigarettes. I know. I thought that was
funny.
Fake
cigarettes?
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And they give you tickets so you can bring stuff, and they do games. It's really a lot of fun. It's not cheap, but for people who are aviation fans or Pan Am fans, it's one of the best dinners you'll have in a long time.
Yeah. Do read Johnny's article. Lisa, my wife, said, hey, did you see what Johnny did? And I had to go and see it, and it's just amazing.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. And I got another website for you, air-related. It's called Air Wander.
Okay.
AIRWANDER.com. So this is if you're looking to fly somewhere and do a stopover. It makes it really easy. I think I mentioned one similar to this a few months ago. So you just put in your city pairs, the dates, and then hit stopover, and it will give you the options that you can choose and how much it will cost you to do the stopover. And, you know, I love making multiple stops because this way you get, you know, more bang for your buck. You get to see different places. You know, one of my favorite trips is to do around the world, which you can also plan on here too, but Ooh. It breaks up flights.
That is really cool.
You got to put in your dates and your city pairs and then and just check it out. Like, so I put in New York to Paris. Actually, no, LA to Paris. And they said for $29 more, I could stop in Paris. Sorry, I could stop in Rome, or I could go down to even South America. They would even give you options, but that was $900 more. But wow. It all depends on the routing and things like that. And there's tons of options.
I'm leaving today, my friends. And look at all the places I could go on the way.
You could go to Iceland for negative. It will save you $12.
Saves you $12 if you're willing to start a stop. That's usually the case because that's Icelandic Air, right?
I would think.
But
that's
it's not a whole lot more. Just, you know, if I want to add, you know, Newark. Well, that's not a good choice. Barcelona, Venice, Bologna. Wow, this is cool. That's really neat.
I love that, you know, it encourages people to travel more and to see different places.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you wanted to spend the night, you could just spend the night there, or you can spend, you know, a week, whatever you want to do.
Wow. And I just love looking at that list. It just gives me wanderlust.
For sure. I mean, I love to travel. And and anything that encourages people to go out and see the world, as I said it before, I, you know, as corny as it sounds, I truly believe the more people that travel internationally, the less prejudices there will be in the world, because people realize that 97% of the people are good people all around the world, but only that 3% get the negative attention.
I agree. 100%. Yep. We got a minute left. You want to do an app or you want to save it for next time?
No, I can do an app. Here's one called Jet Radar. And, So this one is good if you want to set a fare alert. I've always talked about doing fare alerts. So this one will help you set a fare alert. You just put in your city pairs, your dates, and it will let you know if the price drops. Also, what I like about this app is the price map on there. So if you don't know where you want to go, but you have a certain amount of money, you can put in your home airport, and then it will show you a world map, and it will give you options. And you can fly to, you know, you can fly to London for $800 or whatever your the price is.
I like it.
And it's free on iOS and Android.
Jet Radar, cheap flights and airline tickets. Johnny Jet is at johnnyjet.com. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter, too. And don't forget to sign up for his travel newsletter. We'll see you next week, Johnny. Safe travels.
Later.
Yeah, I love that. That Pan Am thing was so cool. I was so jealous. But is the food? Yeah, he's smoking a cigarette. I love that they come up and they light your fake cigarette. I think that's so
cute. Well, they don't light it. They just pretend they light it for the photos. They have a photographer on board.
It's so cute.
And they give you the cigarettes to take. My buddy was like, you know, he used to be a smoker. I'm looking at him. He's just like, the whole night. He's like this. I'm what?
It makes him happy. Makes him happy. So the food is good, though. I mean, it's worth it for the food.
The food is good, and it's, you know, it's multiple courses. They give you the menu. This is the cocktail
so
menu.
So cute. I think Lisa and I might come down and do that. It's in Redondo Beach, huh?
No, actually, this is in the Valley. He set it up originally in Redondo.
Oh, I see.
And then he moved it to the movie studio, which is like this, you know, very random and looks terrible on the outside, but on the inside is where the magic happens.
Okay, and, cool.
So that's outside the Valley.
Cool.
Or in the Valley.
The Valley is like somewhere far away, though, isn't it?
It's 30 miles from LAX. And they give you Pan Am tickets. They give you.
I know. I love that you check in.
They have a lot of fun. I mean, I think they hire all models and actresses. And they.
Oh, yeah. They look gorgeous.
Recreate the whole.
I felt like it was in Catch Me If You Can.
Yes, and I think really they actually filmed that. They might even film that there. I'm not sure on that. I think they filmed that at Long Beach Airport.
Yeah.
But the studio scenes might have been in there.
But there's that great scene where he's dressed as a captain, Pan Am captain, and he's walking with two flight attendants, two stewardesses on either arm. And, oh, man, it's just like those are the days.
And that's how they enter the restaurant.
There's a half hour
cocktail party.
That's so great.
And they all come in that way, and you know they just wave to the crowd, and they get on the plane. It's really
cute.
A nice job.
It's so cute. Lisa was looking at something, and she saw. Remember PSA? You might be too young to remember Southwest Airways. And she saw the flight attendant's uniform. She said they didn't dress like that. And I said they did. They did. It was like hot pants and like bright colors. They looked like a orange sherbet.
Yep.
I said
Southwest
no.
was.
I totally remember. I used to fly PSA to school, and that was always wild. Yeah, it was before Southwest. PSA was kind of like Southwest. They also had the seating where you'd have some people's face. You'd face each other, which I loved.
Yeah, yeah. Southwest used to have that too. Yeah. The bucket seats.
Yeah.
So where did you go to school, by the way?
It went Connecticut.
Where'd you go?
I went to Yale.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah. So I know Connecticut.
Where were you flying from, though?
Well, yeah, PSA couldn't have gone to Connecticut. So I don't remember why I was flying
but
PSA.
You can fly to New York. I mean, New Haven.
What first time I did it, I flew to New Haven, which was nuts.
But you lived in Rhode Island.
No, I lived in California by that time.
Okay.
So the first time I did it, I flew to New Haven. That was nuts. So from then on, I'd fly to New York, and they'd have an airporter to New Haven.
Yeah, I mean, I fly to the New York airports all the time.
I guess so PSA would fly to New York. I guess they would.
For sure.
Yeah, okay. Because it was like Pacific Southwest, but...
I think America West bought PSA, and then... Okay.
They had the smiles on the airplanes. And then, let me show you this. She said, they didn't dress like that. And I said, they absolutely did dress like that. No, that's how I'm a college kid. I remember it.
Yeah. And in this Pan Am experience, actually, throughout dinner, they model the old uniforms.
Oh, love the old uniform with the hats, and right?
They have the hats. They say the dates, the capes.
I don't think I ever got to fly Pan Am. I don't think. All right, Johnny.
Anyway,
take care.
See you next week.
See you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
888 Ask Leo. I promised before the break that I would tell you the six or seven things you need to do to keep yourself secure. And actually, I got to give some credit because the mnemonic comes from a guy who wrote a really good book about bad guys. And let me see if I can find the website, because we've mentioned it before. And it's really the mnemonic is very good because it makes it very easy to remember what you need to do. And I don't have it in front of me, darn it. I'm gonna tease you one more time and say after the break at the top of the hour. I have the book is on my bookshelf. I just don't want to get up and get it. But I will get the book, and I will tell you the name of the book, and I will tell you the mnemonic, and all the things you need to do, no more, no less, to keep yourself safe. I bet you can guess them, frankly. If you've listened to this show for any length of time, you certainly know them by now. Mark on the line next from Vienna, Virginia. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, good afternoon or good morning, whichever it is.
Good day. That's why I always say good day.
Okay. I've got a question about a Chrome box.
Yes.
Purchasing one. However, if you've got the time, I'd like to make a quick comment about what you were talking about with United Airlines and the passenger.
Yes, sir.
Okay, my wife is a retired airline employee, and we have for 30-some years been able to fly free, non-revenue. When I first read that article about what had happened with that United passenger, I was absolutely amazed because it's always been understood that it's a non-rev passenger.
No. You're now confusing two stories. There's the one about the young girls who were wearing leggings. They were non-rev passengers.
No. What I'm referring
to, Dr. Dow was not a non-rev passenger. He was a paying passenger.
Exactly. That's my point. We'd always understood non-rev passengers, even if we'd been seated.
Right.
If somebody, a paying customer, showed up at the last moment
before
the pushback, we could be asked to leave.
I get what you're saying, because he was, according to some of the stories, being removed, as were three other people, because they had four crew members who needed to be repositioned. Yeah, I don't know if they were non-rev or they were being repositioned. And I think if they were being repositioned, the idea is, well, there's people waiting for a flight in Louisville. We need to get them their flight crew.
Okay. They weren't flying till the next morning.
Okay.
United could have rented a van and driven.
Yeah, in that case, there's no excuse. The good news is, you know, and I'm sorry that it happened to Dr. Dow, but the good news is this has changed policy for United and pretty much every American carrier, and I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Because what you said is exactly right. Once you're seated, it's unconscionable to say, oh, you got to get up and make way for our employees. That's just not right. You can offer to bump people. You could say, "Hey, we'll give you," and they did. But if the offer isn't taken, then I don't think you really should kick people off the flight. I've gotten kicked off of flights. I don't know if you remember when I told the story, but they came to me. We were standby passengers, and I was very pleased to get booked on. Sat down, unpacked, put my Kindle in the front and my bags up top, and they came to me and said, "The plane is overweight. You need to get off."
Yeah.
And I got off. I didn't complain. I didn't fight it. I didn't need to get the sheriffs. I got off. I did notice that two people then replaced me, which kind of paid the lie to what they had said. But that's okay. I'm sure what happened is that they had, some gold or 1K passengers that needed to get on, and that's fine.
I mean, we were flying from Dulles and Washington, D.C. out to Honolulu one time, and the flight we were on made a stop in Indianapolis, and we were asked to get off the plane even at mid-flight.
Not okay, because then you're stuck.
Oh, no, that was understood,
right?
Being a non-rev passenger.
Well, because you're non-rev. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, what about the Chrome box?
Well, actually, what I'm looking at is the Chrome base.
Chrome base, okay.
Which is a version of the Chrome box, which is sort of an all-in-one. It looks much like the iMac.
Yeah.
All
of these are roughly the same. They're running Google's Chrome OS, which is a very highly customized version of Linux designed for simplicity and security.
Yes, I've got a Chromebook, and I've got a couple of friends who've bought Chromebooks on my recommendation.
Good man.
Okay. However, I am now looking at buying a chrome base for myself.
Okay.
Okay. Now, my question that I'm getting into is, when I look at Amazon's got one, which is about $350.
That's the is that the LG or the Acer, Asus?
No, let me see if I can find that stupid. Oh,
that's
way right. over.
That's okay.
It's the Acer.
It's the Acer.
It's the 24-inch Acer.
Yeah, that's actually a really nice Chrome computer.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Now.
Looks a lot like the iMac, even has the aluminum foot.
Yeah, that's what I say. It looks very much like the iMac.
Yeah.
Okay, if I look at Walmart, they're offering me one for $450. Okay. Now, if I go over to Best Buy, they're $300 more expensive.
Wow.
Well, okay.
Now, make sure you're comparing apples to apples, because there'll be different amounts of RAM, maybe different quality screens, that kind of thing.
It's 4 meg of RAM versus 8 meg of RAM.
Yeah.
It's 16 gig, it's 4 gig of RAM versus 8 gig of RAM, not megs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 16 gigs of storage versus 32 gigs of storage.
Right.
But here's the question that I'm asking. Okay, the less expensive one is running a Celeron processor. The more expensive one is running an i5 processor. Okay, with the Chrome OS, is it worth considering spending extra money to get an Intel Core processor?
I would say in most cases not. The reason, so this is the case across all the Chrome OS devices. They often have higher end that will offer more RAM, better screens, higher processors, and more storage. And I think in most cases, you don't need that. The people who need that are people who keep a lot of tabs open. Because remember, Chrome OS is really all you can do is run the Chrome browser. And then more recently now, you've been able to run Android apps in there, a limited set of Android apps inside of there, which I think is very nice. For that, you're going to want a touch screen. And for that, you are going to want a faster processor and more RAM because the Android subsystem takes up memory. And I think more speed will actually help you with the multitasking. So it kind of comes down to, just as it does with any computer, what are you doing with it? Chrome OS is a fairly lightweight OS, but if you open a lot of tabs and you do a lot of scrolling and you have, you know, websites that take up a lot of processor, you'll use more processor. So it really comes down to your pocketbook and your usage. I always buy the high-end Chromebooks, I should say. I don't like any hesitation at all. And it's not unusual for a slower processor, an Atom processor, a Celeron processor with only 4 gigs of RAM to be maybe just slightly more sluggish. But you may not even notice the difference. And it does make a difference of several hundred dollars in most cases. So this Acer is beautiful. It's very nice. I think spend the money on a good screen. Everybody benefits from the best possible screen. They offer an IPS full HD display. I would take that. If you can get touch, you might want to consider that because that opens up the whole world of Chrome apps. 8 gigs is what I always get, but I think most people are very happy with a Chromebook using a Celeron. And 4 gigs. The more powerful one, they often say, is the business class version. You probably don't know. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I should tell you about Upside. We just started using Upside. I love this. You know the guy who invented Priceline, Jay Walker? He's back with a new service that's for the business traveler. And it will save you a bunch of money on your business travel, but even better than that, if you're traveling on the company's dime and you're doing your booking your own travel, you could put a little something in your pocket too. It's called Upside, upside.com. And if you're a frequent business traveler, your company will save a ton of money. And every time you book a trip at Upside, you will get a gift card worth $100, $200, even $300. Now, since it's my company, when I get the gift card, I just apply it right there and save even more. Upside bundles flights and hotels together. That's how they make their money, for one low price. And by the way, the price is great. I did a bunch of comparisons with other sites. It's great.
Not only will you save money on your business travel, but you'll get that free gift card with every trip you book. And by the way, the gift cards are, you choose the brand. And there are a lot of brands, including Amazon, Target, Nordstrom. So they have a hub, a gift card hub, that you can keep track of all your gift cards. You get the gift cards via email within 1 or 2 days after booking your trip. There's no limit on trips or gift cards. You get more with overseas trips. This is absolutely the way to book business travel. And why not? Because right now, you'll get a $100 gift card minimum when you use the promo code TECHGUY at Upside.com. Try it. At least do a comparison. It's how we're doing all our business trips now. It just takes 3 minutes to find out how much you can save. And it's great to book the flight and the hotel together. They are very good about paring down the list to give you just the top flights and hotels. So it saves you a lot of time. And it's, you get to choose the hotel, you get to choose the airline, you get to choose the flight time. You get all your frequent flyer miles. There's no catches here. They have fantastic 24/7 concierge level customer service. You can call them, of course, but you can also email, chat, or reach them on social before, during, and after every trip. During's important. Sometimes, a flight gets changed. It's great to have them there. Upside.com, brand new from Jay Walker, and he has done a great job at putting this together. I invite you to use the promo code TECHGUY because you're going to get at least a $100 gift card on your first trip, which is very nice. And it lets Jay know that you heard this on the Tech Guy show, which really helps us. Really a good service. Now, next time you're ready to book some business travel, Upside.com. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. Upside.com. Don't forget the offer code Tech Guy. It's kind of cool. And I got to talk to Jay Walker, by the way, which was also kind of cool. I said, Jay, was William Shatner your idea when you started Priceline? He said, yep. I said, William Shatner owes you big. Really tied the room together, man. That rug really tied the room together. John Goodman is, yeah. I didn't realize Flea was one of the nihilists. Which is pretty funny. And Amy Mann is one of the nihilists. She's the female nihilist whose toe got... Oh. Never mind. I won't say any more.
You want a toe? I can get you a toe.
You want a toe? I can get you a toe. I can have a toe for you this afternoon, Donnie. I did get the book. I have it right here. Yeah. If you haven't seen The Big Lebowski yet, there's no hope for you. Flea killed Donnie. Well, sort of killed Donnie. Oh, it's such a good movie. Telling John I watched it again last night. Because we're talking about all the books I want to read, including the Frontiers saga. And I said, yeah, and I should have read last night and said I watched Big Lebowski again. So good, though. I don't know anything about telescopes. Let's ask. Yeah, David Thewlis is in it. It's not recognizable. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and what else? Digital stuff. Virtual reality. Augmented reality. Real reality. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can reach us from outside that area with Skype. Absolutely. Use Skype out. We also have a great website, techguylabs.com, where everything is located, including what I'm about to talk about. I'm sorry I had to tease you for so long, but I had to go get the book, which is on my bookshelf across from me. And it's a guy I interviewed some time ago, and I really liked. Named Mark Goodman. He was... a senior advisor to Interpol. He worked at the LAPD, worked in forensics there. He also was the futurist in residence with the FBI, the founder of the Future Crimes Institute, chair for policy, law, and ethics at Singularity University, and on and on and on. His book is called Future Crimes. You can find what I'm about to talk about at futurecrimes.com. In fact, it's a very easily, it's one page. You could print it out and you'll know all of this stuff, but you can give it to friends and family. And what it is how to protect yourself online. The book, Future Crimes, says everything is connected, everyone is vulnerable, and what we can do about it. And it's really about this world we live in. It actually came out a few years ago, but he was absolutely right on about hackers and technology and the break-ins we're starting to see over and over again. And he came up with a mnemonic. He calls it UPDATE, the UPDATE protocol. And each letter means something, UPDATE. That makes it easy to remember. U is update, update frequently. Anything that goes online, media players, plugins, and browsers absolutely has to be kept up to date. And the good news is most of those are now automatically updating. All your browsers will automatically update. They don't even ask you. Occasionally you may see, you know, a notice from a browser, you need to close me so I can update, restart me. Chrome especially will do that, Firefox too. But Adobe Flash, Adobe Acrobat, any media player you use, any plugins you use, all of those, because they go to, they're on the internet, are targets. Anything on the internet is a target. And if you want to, and of course the operating systems too, need to be kept up to date. The good news is both Apple and Microsoft have done such a good job of keeping their operating systems up to date that hackers are less likely to be attacking them. The bad news is they're now attacking browsers and Flash and things like that. So U is update frequently, and that's true for mobile devices as well. And it's one of the reasons I say if you're going to use Android, pick a manufacturer and a carrier that will make sure that they Google monthly security patches are automatically, you know, downloaded, promptly downloaded and installed. Samsung says they'll do that. LG says they'll do that. Motorola does do that. I don't know if they've made a pledge, but they do that. And, of course, Google does it, and it's one of the reasons I recommend and actually still use a Google phone, from the Pixel from Google, because those are the most quickly updated. That's really important. Apple doesn't have any problem with that because they've had such clout in the marketplace that their phones get updated. Apple updates them all the time, and no carrier stops that or slows it down. The P in update is passwords. We've talked a lot about this. Make long, strong, random passwords. Not birth dates and kids' names and dogs' names, but truly random combinations of upper and lower case letters, numbers, and punctuation. In fact, it's so hard to make and remember good passwords that I recommend you use a password vault, 1Password or RoboForm AI or my favorite LastPass to generate these passwords and to keep track of them. If you can memorize a password, it's probably not a very good one. It needs to be long and random, and that makes a big difference. And I will add to that, and maybe this book was written before. No, actually, he mentions it. I would add to that, anywhere that you have the choice or the option of what they call two-factor authentication, turn that on. Google does it. Facebook does it. Apple does it. Dropbox, Evernote, PayPal, all, you know, LinkedIn and Twitter. Turn on two-factor. It's a little less convenient, but it's a lot more secure. Even if a bad guy gets your password, unless they have your phone, you're safe. So that's U, P, and then the D in download is really a good advice to avoid getting bit by malware, which is download software only from trusted sites, Apple's App Store or the Android Store. Be very careful of updates or downloads that offer themselves to you. You know, only download things that you know you want and you went out and got, typed in the address by hand. Because most ransomware, most malware, like that document malware I talked about last hour, put a pop-up on the screen and say, click here. Don't do it. Don't do it. And free stuff is especially troubling. It's free for a reason. That's the UPD. Now there's the A. This one is, in time, has changed a little bit, but it's a recommendation you've heard me say many times. Don't run as administrator or root or system, a user. Run as a limited or standard user. That's always good because the permissions you have are the permissions the virus will get. It's less important these days because both Windows and Macintosh, even if you're running as administrator will ask you for permission, in some cases ask you for administrator password before they do anything that's potentially dangerous. And a lot of viruses have figured out a way to escalate, to steal administrator credentials, you know, to without your permission escalate. So it's less important than it used to be. But boy, if you want to be really safe, don't run as an administrator. You know, have an administrator account. Always create an administrator account when you set up a computer, but also create a limited account when you set up a computer. And for day-to-day operations, use the limited account. When you need to do updates or installs or mess with the computer, you can log in as administrator. The T in update I don't really agree with, but it's not bad for you, but I don't know how good it is. He says turn off your computers when you're not using it. Just by not being online, you're safer. It's been my experience that almost always now, when you get infected, it's because you're online and more than just being online, doing something. You know, you're accepting that download or visiting dangerous websites. But he says if you turn it off, it's true. When your computer's turned off, it can't get infected. I can't argue with that. I don't think it's the most important thing. And the last item in update, UPDATE, is encrypt. And I do that whenever I set up a computer or a new phone, I turn on encryption. That's what, because if you lose the phone or the hard drive is stolen, that way a bad guy can't get your stuff. And don't we all put, you know, like everything on the computer? I do. If you got my phone, you'd have my life. So turn on encryption. And if you're using solid state devices, turn it on before you put anything on there. Turning on encryption on a solid state device after you put stuff on there doesn't guarantee security. Stuff still might leak through for fairly technical reasons. But if you haven't turned it on yet, it's okay. Turn it on. Better than nothing. And that's it. You notice you didn't hear any antivirus in there or security software. Nope. If you do these six things, that's all you need to do. Update frequently. Use good passwords and two-factor authentication. Careful who you download stuff from. Don't run as an administrator. Turn off the computer when you're not using it. I wouldn't bother about that one, but you can if you want. And use encryption, hard drive encryption, whenever possible. What's not in there, but I definitely want to add it, is backup. And that's only if all the other things fail. At least you can wipe your computer and start over. If you've backed up everything, you at least have a plan B, shall we say. Great book, and credit to Mark Goodman, the author, Future Crimes. But if you go to futurecrimes.com, his website, you'll find the complete update list there. And I'll put a link also in the show notes at techguylabs.com. And I did promise you I'd give you that. And every 4 or 5 months, it's really important to go through that. I apologize if you've heard the spiel before. But, you know, now more than ever, we really have to protect ourselves online. We have to be secure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones right after this. Yeah, David Fulis is all of a sudden like a star, isn't he? He is so good in Fargo with the bad teeth. Oh, my God, he's so good. Let me see what he plays in them. I saw his name in the credits, and I went, what? Oh, he's the crazy giggling guy. Bald guy, the German that's reading the art book, is the video artist. He's Knox Harrington. Yeah, I'll show you. Is the volume on here? He's this guy.
So you're Lebowski.
Wow. Yeah. It's a small, small
Marty's
role.
Tell me all about you. She'll be back in a minute. Sit down.
I guess I recognize
him. Want a drink?
Yeah, sure. White Russian.
The bar's over there.
He is kind of a chameleon, isn't he?
What do you do, Lebowski?
Oh, he's so good in the new Fargo. Oh. Oh, he's so good. So good. He plays VK. In fact, the new Fargo might be my favorite of them yet. Yeah, there are no small roles in Coen movies. But he's got a big role in Fargo season 3. Oh, he's so good in it. Does the spinner work to reduce my fidgeting? I don't know. Could be. Gosh, that's a good question. If you don't wait for the end, then you'll have to watch commercials. But I couldn't hold back. And I bought the first two seasons. I will buy the third season. It is incredible so far. And you know who's really good in it? Is Ethan Hawke. What is it? Who's the lead? I can't remember now. I want to say Ethan Hawke. That's not right. Ewan McGregor. That's right. I haven't seen Brockmire yet. No, I like Hank Azaria. Yeah, and whatever you do, don't Google VM Varga. I know. Oh, Knox Harrington, this whole time. Holy cow, I did not get your, oh my God. I didn't get your handle. I feel like an idiot. That's hysterical. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You want to talk high tech? Let's do it. Shane on the line from Indianapolis. Hi, Shane.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing? Welcome.
Good. So I have a little problem with my NVIDIA Shield.
Okay. I have one. Which, now, is it the tablet or the TV device? The tablet.
TV device.
The TV device. I have the original one, and I love it. I was watching it last night. I love it. What's wrong? Awesome. What's going on? Yeah.
Okay. So, first of all, you got to know, Myst just came out in the App Store.
Oh, Myst. Wow.
Yeah. It's called Real Myst.
M-Y-S-T.
It's R-E-A-L-M-Y-S-T.
And that's, of course, the famous game that was originally a HyperCard stack on the Macintosh. It's a puzzle game. It doesn't move very fast, but it will be a great nostalgia trip for a lot of people. Good. I'll have to play it.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm dying here. I'm like, I got to play this game again. But every time I try and buy something from the store, I get a DFRPC01 error retrieving information from CERT. Now, if I go, because I've been reading some forums, and the forums say that it could be, it's part of your account, you got to contact Google. Well, I contact Google, and I don't know if they're just trying to reset my normal Play account.
Yeah, that's what they say to do is to restart your force stop and then clear the cache and restart your Google account, Play account.
Right.
And the problem is apparently a corrupted cache in the Play Store.
Okay.
So I don't know if you have access to that. You know, on a normal Android device, that's right there in the settings. You go to apps.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know how you do that on a Shield.
And on Shield, what I did was I was like, okay, well, let me try this. So I went into the payment information, and I swapped that out with another credit card.
You know, it's funny because I think I got this error message myself last night on Netflix, and it crashed, and I restarted it, and it was okay. So
it's been doing it for a couple of weeks for me now.
Yeah, no, you want to fix this, and the problem is the Shield is an Android TV device, but it doesn't give you even. And it is, by the way, Nougat. It's Android 7, but it doesn't give you, to my knowledge, access to that particular setting. So perhaps what you'll have to do, I'd hate to say this, if it doesn't, it's gone on for several weeks, so it hasn't cleared up, then I think what you might have to do is reset the Shield, you know, start over. And there is a command to do that.
There is a command to do that.
Yeah. It's hard to find. I was trying to. the menus and the Shield settings are terrible. That's very hard to figure out where something is. But there is a way to do that on the Shield, and that may be it's overkill because you're clearing everything out, and all you really want to clear out is the Google Play Store cache.
Even a hammer that takes a window.
Yeah. If anybody knows a way to do this on Android TV, that's what we want to find out. The Shield is a really, it's a little pricey. It's a $200 Android TV device. It has Chromecast capabilities, so it's your Chromecast, but it also has the Play Store, which means you can play games on it. And because it comes from NVIDIA, it has GeForce Now, which is NVIDIA's streaming gaming service. And I use that to play games, and this thing is as capable as a Xbox One or a PlayStation 4. Do you ever use the NVIDIA Now on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bought a really nice gaming PC from Asus, and I mean it doesn't have the latest NVIDIA card, but it's got the 990 or something like that in it, which at the
good time enough, was, yeah.
Yeah, and then like 3 weeks later they come up with the better one, but yeah, I've played Neverwinter Nights. I've streamed it from Neverwinter Nights.
Well, so you can actually, so the NVIDIA's GeForce Now, they stream it from their server. So you don't even have to have the gaming PC. You pay a monthly subscription fee and you play the games. It's not, it's 720p, but it does a great job. So anyway, the answer to your question is, if you can't, and I'm going to look and see if we can find a way. What you want to do is you want to clear the cache, and this would be an easy thing to do on an Android phone, clear the cache on the Play Store because it's got bad data in there, and that's why it's crashing on you. Once you clear the cache, you might have to re-enter your password, log in again, but then it gets all the settings from the servers, and you'll be back exactly where you were before. You're not losing a lot. On the other hand, if you can't find a way to do that specifically, you can do it globally by resetting the entire NVIDIA Shield device. Problem is, then you do have to set it all up again.
Right.
But did you have the original one? So you've had it for a year or so?
No. I just got.
You got the brand new one. Yeah.
I got the brand new one, the little tiny thin one.
I know, isn't it? It's so tiny. It's beautiful.
It's awesome. I love it. Well, me and a coworker, I told him about it. And I was like, man, I'm saving up for this. And then he one day came up and said, hey, guess what I got? Oh, you did that.
That's my idea.
Got the tablet along with it.
Yeah. Well, basically, that's what you're getting. You're getting the same thing as the tablet, but in an Android TV form factor. That's why it's so good at gaming.
It's also awesome because it's also prime for gaming as well.
I agree. NVIDIA, which designs these video cards, made this K1 chip as a show that they could do an amazing ARM-based gaming chip. And I would say it's the king of the Android ARM chips. It's really good. What surprised me is nobody's made a phone with it. I don't know why not. Maybe it's a bad battery life or something. I don't know.
Everything is optimized for games. So I would imagine it drains pretty quick.
I wonder, another thing to try before you reset the whole thing,
okay,
would be if you logged out of your Google account. In other words, that would be a lot easier than resetting the whole Shield, but just log out of your Google account, reboot the Shield, and then log back in again.
Let's do that.
That might be something you could do. Because, of course, the most painful thing would be to all we really need to do is clear this cache. And, the most painful way is to clear the entire device. But maybe you'll need to do that. In fact, the fact that the cache is having problems so early, since you just got this device, literally just came out, indicates that it might be worth doing that. There may be more hard drive issues in general. We're going to put – there's a lot of information. The chat room's being really good on doing the research on this. Virgil has a link to XDA Developers, which is a great forum for Android users. They have a whole Shield TV section, and they have a page on clearing cache and so forth. In fact, I've got to read that because I bet you there's lots of little tips and tricks that they've discovered on that Shield TV. Really, one of the – not the least expensive. It's cost more than a Roku, but it's 4K. It's great if you like to game. I'm really enjoying it. The NVIDIA Shield TV. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Chris Marquardt, how are ya?
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. What are we talking about today?
pinhole photography, because it's World Pinhole Day.
It's World Pinhead Day. Pinhole Day.
Nope. Pinhole Day.
Okay, good.
It's each year on the last Sunday of April, it's World Pinhole Day.
Last Sunday of April.
And I have a couple of
You know, it's funny, the last Sunday in April in Petaluma is Butter and Eggs Day.
Well, so, then that's the same day.
Yeah, there you go.
Camera obscura.
Camera obscura. We have the best pinhole camera in the world right here in San Francisco. Have you ever seen the camera obscura in San Francisco? Hold on. Uh-oh. Yeah, something went wrong. You're okay.
They have a nice one at Griffith Observatory in L.A.
Oh, do they? But I love the one in San Francisco because you could see the seals on the rocks, and it's so cool. It's so cool. Yes, butter and eggs. So this whole time,
Knox Harrington.
I hadn't. Did you know that?
Well,
who knows that guy's name, right? She mentions it.
Of course.
Oh, that's Knox Harrington. He's the video artist. And you know, it's funny because I saw the name Knox Harrington. I went, oh, that's familiar, but I didn't then say, oh, that's in chat.
Did you see his response?
No. He says,
Knox Harrington giggles.
Oh my God, this whole time. I'm going to have to come up with an obscure movie character and make that my chat handle. Knox Harrington. That's so funny. So funny. Oh, I'm just a friend of Maud's. That's right. I should play that whole clip. I had the clip. What a great movie. Man, that one ages well. Some movies don't age well. Yes, I saw. You better hurry up and do it. And then it's Hewless. Do you watch Fargo?
No.
I'm jealous.
Did I get to watch it all?
Yeah.
Binge it?
Yeah, binge it. And actually, somebody was saying, should I binge season 3 or watch it? And if you can hold off, binge it. Of course, it's always better. But I can't hold off. It's too good. Oh, it's so good. Ewan McGregor plays twin brothers in series 3. But Billy Bob is brilliant in Series 1. Season 1. Season 2 is a little off. But Season 1 is maybe some of the best TV I've ever seen. It's right up there with Breaking Bad. It's brilliant. Maybe even better. And then Season 2 is a little bit off. And then so far, Season 3 is fantastic. It might be the best of the three. Bette Jones good? All right, I've been looking at that. We get FX. I might watch that too. I haven't seen it yet. Ewan plays twins. And they're great. Kind of like, you know, it's funny because... is it Zach Galifianakis that's in Baskets that plays twins? And he does a really good job of two very different twins. That's actually a pretty good series, too. It's a little quirky. Ewan plays twins. Fargo is amazing. Amazing. Mama, don't take that Kodachrome away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That lovely music means it's time once again for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris is a professional photographer. He works at a variety of media, including film and digital, and stops by every week to help us with our digital photography. He hosts the Great Tips from the Top Floor podcast at tfttf.com. He's based in Germany, but he does podcasts in English as well as German, and his English is so good, I bet you didn't even know he was based in Germany. And also leads a bunch of wonderful workshops, and you can find those all at discoverthetopfloor.com. Can you hear me okay, Chris?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you. We had a little technical difficulties. I was stalling. You rebooted all your equipment.
Thank you.
And here he is. Amazing, yeah. Amazing. Welcome to the show. So I was mentioning that you are a master of multiple photographic mediums, of course, digital photography, film photography. You've got a book on film photography that's easily the best book out on film photography. But there's a medium we haven't mentioned, photography that doesn't have a lens at all.
Exactly, and it, what better day than World Pinhole Day to talk about this?
Wait a minute, this is World Pinhole Day?
The last Sunday in April is World Pinhole Day. Yes, it is.
Wow.
Every year. And
wow.
it's there to kind of celebrate that very simple kind of photography. Pinhole photography is literally the simplest way you can make pictures, because you don't even need a lens, as you just said. You just need a light tight box, a small hole on one side, something light sensitive on the other side, like a digital sensor or a piece of film or a piece of photo paper, and you can make photos. So it's really simple. And you can pretty much take any light tight box that you have.
I think the first time I experienced pinhole was when I was a kid, and we were going to watch a total eclipse of the sun. And you could poke a hole in a shoebox and point the hole at the sun and look at the back of the shoebox and see the eclipse happen.
That's pretty much the sun projecting through that hole.
Right,
yes.
Right.
You can see little suns if you're under a tree and the sun peeks through the little holes between the leaves. You can see the sun on your hand multiple times because there are several holes.
It's a miracle.
People make pinhole cameras from all sorts of things, like beer cans, for example. That's
wow.
A pretty simple thing. You just cut it open, put a piece of film in there in the dark, poke a hole in the other side, close it up again, and you have a camera. And it's really interesting because that hole gives you some special properties to the photography. For example, everything in the photo is equally sharp, but also equally unsharp. If you... pinhole has a little, kind of a slight unsharpness to it, which gives it a bit of a dreamy look. And as opposed to your camera with a lens on it that has like a place where the focus is, and then stuff behind the focus is out of focus and in the front is out of focus, that pinhole camera has everything in focus, from just an inch in front of the camera to infinity. Oh, everything has the same sharpness.
I know why. Because that's how depth of field works, right? Because when you have your camera lens open, wide open, with a low aperture number, you know, that means then only a narrow focus. But if you go f/22, where it's got the tiny, then it's like a pinhole. It's got the tiniest aperture.
Spot on.
Everything's focused.
Now we're not talking about your average f/8, f/11, f/16. That's
what
the kind of things that
What's
you might
pinhole?
Be used to.
What's f/100?
A pinhole camera. F-250, F-300 maybe.
Really?
The really tiny holes, yeah.
Wow.
As we said, a pinhole. And that gives you that long long depth of field, but also, of course, gives you longer exposures because there's not much light coming in. So you will be shooting typically from a tripod or wedging the camera on something, and then depending on maybe in the bright sunlight you might be fine with like just a couple of seconds of exposure, but inside that can go into the minutes to hours. There are people who are doing what's called solargraphy, which is like photography, but you're shooting the sun with a pinhole camera. And some of these solargraphy experiments go 6 months or longer. So you have one of those beer can pinhole cameras. You poke a hole in one side. You just take some gaffer tape and tie it up to something, and then come back 6 months later, and you will have these traces of the sun as they change over the months, and the sun goes higher and then it goes lower, and you can kind of follow that. That's really interesting.
That's
another
cool.
Another one is really interesting. If you go to tfttf.com/trashcam, one word, trash cam. That's a project, I think it's from here, from Germany, from Hamburg, where they took big trash bins and converted them to pinhole cameras and then put them around Hamburg and let them just sit there for a while and take photos with big trash bins.
Oh, that's hysterical.
That is hysterical. The world's biggest camera ever is a pinhole camera. And they built this in 2006 in Irvine, California, in an abandoned, well, not in an abandoned F-18 hangar, out of an abandoned F-18 hangar.
Wow.
The hangar itself was the camera. So they pretty much covered up all the little things that light could come in. And then they put this huge piece of cloth with a photosensitive emulsion on it up on one side of the wall, and then on the other side they had a hole in the door that was doing the exposure. Now, that camera was obviously not very flexible. It could just take one kind of picture, but it is literally the biggest camera in the world ever, and it's a pinhole camera. So pinhole has so much to give you, and if you want to play with your kids like a little craft project or something for a Sunday afternoon, making a pinhole camera is just perfect.
A lot of fun. Yeah. And it's pinhole day. So,
and it's World Pinhole Day right
now. Pinhole Day. Actually, it makes sense that it'd be now because you want bright sun, don't you? It doesn't work very well if it's dark.
It depends on how much time you have.
Yeah, I guess
it really depends on the amount of time you have. It could be. Could be just a few seconds in bright sunlight, but indoors with a pinhole camera, you will probably be in the minutes to an hour or longer.
Now, Chris, let us talk about our assignment because we are in week two. It means we have a few more weeks. It's not too late if you want to get involved here. It's a chance to take a picture, submit it to Flickr, and get the comments of our tech guy Flickr group, and then even get Chris's comments if you're selected as one of the top three. What is our subject for the day or the month?
The subject for the current assignment is SET, S-E-T.
No idea. SET.
One of those words that has so many meanings that it's almost too hard again. It's not easy because it's not like a very simple go-to solution. Let me take a photo of this. It's very...
Do you do that?
You have to be a bit creative.
Do you look in the dictionary and look for words that have more than, you know, five or six definitions? Is that what you're doing?
Last time and this time I did it, yeah.
Busted.
Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll do it once more after that.
Okay. Very fun. So that's the trick. We don't know what SET means to you. It does. You don't have to know what it means to Chris. Just think of something that could illustrate that. And really, it's an excuse just to go out today, or in tomorrow, and the next day, and take your camera with you. If your camera's a camera phone, that's fine. It doesn't have to be a fancy camera. Take a picture that illustrates that idea, that concept. And then the trick is you got to submit it to our tech guy group on Flickr. Flickr.com is a free site from Yahoo. I think Yahoo's changed their name to Oath, but they, I don't know why.
No, Flickr's still around.
Flickr is not. So go to Flickr.com. And if you're not a member, it's free to join. And if you are a member, go to the tech guy group. You'll know it's the right group because you get a picture of me. And there's like 10,000 members and 11,000 members. And just say, add that to your list of groups that you're a member of, and then submit as up to a picture a week. Do make sure you put the word SET in the tags, though, so we know that that's your submission. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will tag you. And maybe in a couple of weeks, Chris will review the best pictures, and you'll get fame, glory, and absolutely no money. Thank you, Chris. Catch his work at discoverthetopfloor.com. And he joins us every week to talk digital photography. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll go back to the phones right after this. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Leo.
Have a wonderful day. I'm glad you just you rebooted everything, huh?
I just rebooted. Yeah. I still have no clue what this is. What's going on?
Well, we were using IPDTL this time, I see. So maybe, I don't know if that's related.
No, that's completely unrelated.
It works well.
Definitely on my side.
It looks great.
Something with USB, but I'm not really sure what.
Yeah, because it's, you know what happened? It started fading.
Yeah, any suggestions for a good Thunderbolt? A good and not expensive two-channel Thunderbolt interface?
I'm XLR to Thunderbolt.
Right now.
Oh, I see.
I'm doing USB right now, but that is so shaky. And I think Thunderbolt would be better. Yeah, but something that doesn't break the bank.
I would look at Blackmagic, see what they got.
I
don't know, and I'll have to ask. That's a good one for Alex Lindsay.
Whatever suggestions, I'm open to. And to make a little investment here, because it's really, it's only happening with you though. That's the interesting thing. I'm recording 3-hour podcasts on this USB interface, and it works fine. So, but I think we narrowed it down to not being on your side.
Looks like Zoom makes a Thunderbolt converter. And we know, we like Zoom a lot. XLR.
Oh, yeah, the TAC2.
Yeah.
And the 2R.
And Blackmagic Mini Converter is...
Mini Recorder
is XLR to Thunderbolt.
XLR? Oh, it's audio?
Yeah, it's for audio.
I need... it's just audio. I need XLR. I have an XLR.
USB interface seems to be failing. Focusrite is what we use. XLR to Thunderbolt.
Oh, to Thunderbolt.
John's just catching up to speed here.
I want a video to Thunderbolt. Why?
No, because that's just like everybody else. He has a Heil mic connected to that USB interface that we sent him, and that, the M-Audio or whatever, and it's dying.
It's something is wrong.
That we send out now is Focusrite. But that's USB.
Yeah.
But no USB, please. No USB.
Looks like this TAC2 is very interesting.
It's looking interesting.
We're going to have to get one of these. That is really interesting. It's really for a DAW.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
High resolution streaming audio. Wow. It's probably really expensive.
$300 here.
Yeah. Well, if you want that, we'll pay for it. Look at that. Yeah. We should get one and try it anyway. This could be our new... How much is the Focusrite we send out?
Well, not everybody's got Thunderbolt.
But if you had Thunderbolt, wouldn't it be better?
$100.
So it's $100.
Yeah, but I want to get away from USB.
I don't blame you. And of course, a lot of our contributors now are getting Macs that don't have USB ports anymore.
True.
This looks good. It's got two
XLRs.
Well,
the small TAC2 is only €200 here. But that doesn't... Oh, that has XLR, yeah. That might actually do the trick,
yeah. It has two XLRs in, and then it's Thunderbolt out in the front. It's also got... It's an amplifier, it looks like. It's got... You could do headphones through it, and it's got an instrument. Yeah, it's a DAC.
Well, check it out.
Yeah.
It's a DAC.
Sounds good.
Yeah, this looks really
I think
good.
I'll have a look at that.
Yeah. High resolution. That's nice. 24-192. You can do up to 24-192.
Not that that would help my voice.
No. It wouldn't help anything, but...
All right. I'll look into that for sure.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, low-tech, is the T2. All right.
Thanks,
Chris. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Melinda, next in Sherman Oaks. Hi, Melinda.
Hello. Hi, the phone was on.
I know. You dived for it, too. I hope you're all right. Didn't hurt anything.
I'm fine. Thank you. Listen, over the years, my computers have been hacked, and I have another one. And what happens is when I get to the desktop after turning it on, it takes forever to get to, let's say, click Gmail. It takes 3 to 4 minutes to get to Gmail.
That's not right.
And then the next one, the same thing. And it just drives me nuts. Sometimes I'll sense he's there and I'll just pull out the plug. And then, it comes up in safe
mode. So is that your only symptom is slow startup times?
No. No, I wish it were. They change the money I owe to the IRS, for example. Or on eBay, they will wipe out all the pictures. And, I didn't know. And, I thought everything was good on this one thing. And
do you know how? Do you have a suspicion as to how or who is doing this?
I have absolutely no idea.
You made an enemy?
I remember you said once, not anymore, they all died. No.
hey, isn't that a nice feeling? You've outlived your enemies? Nice feeling. I look forward to those days.
Actually... I was just kidding. I don't think I do. You said once that if the government or NSA wants to get on your computer,
yeah, they're not. They'd have to think you were a terrorist to do that. I don't think that's what's going on. And in fact, you'd have to be the. In general, individuals, you can get malware as part of a kind of mass scheme. Malware authors, people like ransomware authors and so forth, will put malware on your system. But it's not, don't take it personal. They're trying to get everybody because the more people they get, the more money they make. That's not, we don't usually even call that hacking, because that's just malware and everybody gets it and it happens. But what you're describing are absolutely symptoms of being hacked. You use the right term, but that would only happen if somebody were targeting you. And generally, people, it's rare that an individual is targeted unless you've made enemies. It's not going to be the government unless you're a terrorist or they suspect you of being a terrorist. I'm sure, Melinda, you've done nothing to incur the wrath of the NSA. Actually, the NSA is not even supposed to spy on people in the United States. The FBI is supposed to do that. The NSA and the CIA are only supposed to intercept communications that involve foreign actors. Now, if you're communicating with somebody who is on the watch list, that would put your mail in that bucket. In fact, the NSA has been gathering mail that's even about people on the watch list until recently. They just announced they're no longer going to collect email that is merely about a bad guy. It has to be to or from a bad guy. Oh, that's a relief. You know, the truth is, part of this is that the NSA's interpretation of collection is different from yours and mine. They collect everything, but they only look at stuff that they're interested in. And there's good reason for that. You might say, well, NSA, if you say you only collect email that's to or from a bad guy, not about a bad guy, how would you know? How would you know that it's email about a bad guy unless you read the email? Well, that's exactly right. So, I mean, the logic of what they've said even doesn't make any sense. They have to collect and read it all to figure it out if it's about a bad guy. Now, I guess they're not going to do that anymore. They're only look at who it's to and from. But they have to collect it all to do that. Okay. Anyway, I don't think you're the target of NSA or government hacking. So that's why I asked you, do you have enemies? Have you got on somebody's case, somebody's nerves, or maybe an ex-boyfriend? You know, unfortunately, that happens. And those people will be more difficult to resist because they have better tools. They, for instance, if it's somebody you know, maybe they can get into your house. Generally, the kind of hacking you described, which is completely controlling and owning your computer to the extent that they could see your eBay passwords and stuff, that usually means they have to either get physical access to your hardware or get malware on your system that is, you know, that gives them basically an entree into your system, and then they need to spend a not insignificant amount of time exploring it and taking it over. So in that case, you know, it's got to be somebody who really wants you. Unless, you know, now you're a target. You could be a target for a variety of reasons. If you're a celebrity, you know, especially if you're an attractive female celebrity, you might be a target. If you're very wealthy, you might be a target. Melinda, are you an attractive female celebrity or very wealthy?
I was in Hollywood.
Were you an actress?
Yes.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think do you have a family member who might be anxious to get your stuff?
No, it's a big, big mystery. It truly is.
Yeah, because, well, and I wouldn't leap to the conclusion that you're being hacked. And, you know, and it's kind of like a, you know, Hercule Poirot mystery. You need to have means and motive,
mm-hmm.
right? The means exist if the motive exists. And it could just be you have a series of unlikely or improbable, as somebody in the chat room says, computer glitches that make it seem like you're being hacked. For instance, a drive that's slowest. And by the way, you should take this seriously. If somebody's broken into your eBay account, change the password immediately. And if they get in again, then you know that your system is compromised in some way. Unless you're writing your password on a post-it note and putting it on the window. Right? You're not doing that, right?
Only my measurements.
Were you in anything I might have seen?
Probably.
Oh, my.
I'd rather not say.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool, though. That's cool.
Could it be AI?
Yeah, well, AI, no. AI hasn't advanced. Artificial intelligence has not advanced to the point where no human intervention is involved. The kind of thing you're describing requires a dedicated opponent who's spending a lot of time. And again, unless he's got strong motive, it seems unlikely. A family member, for instance, who maybe wants, you know, says, ah, grandma's got some bucks. I'm going to see if I can get into her bank accounts. Something like that.
Yeah, no. No.
And you're not a terrorist?
I have been broken into several times.
Your house has.
Yeah. Yeah, and called the police, and they said, well, if you don't have evidence, there's nothing we can do. And, of course, they're not going to leave clues around here. Yeah.
Well, I think here's, I'm going to give you, because I can't, I can't get into your system, and I can't figure this out. I think the best thing to do, if you're worried about this kind of thing, is to restart. You know, and this will fix the computer. In other words, wipe the drive and reinstall the operating system.
I was afraid you were going to.
Yeah. Well, did you? That's always the advice. If you believe you've been compromised, there's no good. Especially if you've been compromised by a worthy adversary, somebody knows what they're doing, like the NSA. Then they can do stuff that's very difficult to detect. The only way to really protect yourself would be to erase that hard drive. Do you have the discs that came with that computer?
Well, this was a gift from a friend, and he did send, he made, startup discs?
Perfect.
Or something.
Perfect.
Yeah.
He's a good friend.
Yes, he is.
So that's what you need, and you've got those. So you can then, you could use those discs to do this. You can put them in, boot to the discs, and erase and start over. Do make sure you back up your data.
Yes.
And I think you're probably okay. So tell me again, your eBay, your stuff on your eBay account was deleted?
IRS amounts have been changed.
IRS amounts have been changed.
Credit card paid on online banking, they'll wipe out a payment, and then I'll notice and I'll call immediately, and I beg them not to up the interest rate because, they didn't get it on time. It's just malicious.
It's little annoyances. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, what else? That kind of stuff. And my stuff that I order from eBay comes broken or is stolen. I've had three items stolen.
You'd have to have an enemy to do all that. And I don't want to encourage you to be paranoid.
No, I'm not. I'm very third person about it because I have to be. Otherwise, I get too emotionally upset.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. I would erase the hard drive and start over, and I think you'll probably be okay. Because then they would have to start over. And if it's just petty harassment, if it's not somebody who has decided that you are my life, my sworn enemy for life, and I will do everything I can to annoy you, then they're not going to go to all that trouble to do it all again. It is true that somebody can break into your house. That means they have access to your system. And if they have access to your system, all bets are off. So, if you fear that, I would erase the use those recovery discs, erase everything and start over. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can Skype us if you're outside that area. Use your Skype out. 888-827-5536. We do have a website with lots of information. It's free. It's open. No sign-up required. It's techguylabs.com. And I highly encourage you to use it. If you hear something on the show, don't feel like you have to write it all down because we're doing that for you. Techguylabs.com. In fact, there's a lot more than we mention on the show on the website. Thanks to the chat room and our, great audience who go in there and add stuff. It's great. I'm very grateful. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's go to Los Angeles. Bob is on the line. Hi, Bob.
Hi. How are you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, long-time listener and first-time caller.
Well, welcome. I'm glad you found your way here.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, I unfortunately was tired on Tuesday night, and I did what I have told myself based on your program for so many years, never clicked on a link in an email.
Oh, they get you when you're down.
Yeah, and what it was, it looked really legitimate. It's a couple called Jeremy and Connie. They say that they're, should I say the website that they were on?
Let's not. I don't want to send people to a malicious website.
It just that it sounded like a legitimate website. It came through a link on my phone, I believe through...
So if you're a bad guy, that's a really good way to get people to click on links. You send it in a text message. And nine out of 10 people will, even if it looks suspicious, go, well, what harm could there be? And will click that link.
Oh, by the way, it was not a text message. It was something I read on Flipboard. You know, they put those little.
So was it an ad then for something?
Yeah, it was a comparison of the top website builders. So I clicked on that, and they said they had a link of six or seven things. I won't say.
The thing is, they may be completely legitimate, and I should point that out. It may be that their site got hacked. In fact, that's if you're a bad guy, the best thing you can do. See, websites can be hacked just like computers can be hacked. Like an individual's computer can be hacked. Websites are running software. They're, you know, internet facing. And if there's a flaw or an exploit in that software, which there frequently is, not unusual, then a bad guy can inject what they call kits, malware kits, into the website. And then a visitor's will be infected. So it could be Dave and Connie had nothing to do with it.
The reason I called you is because I got the Note 4 largely based on your recommendation many years ago, and it's worked fine. I love it. And I'll probably get the Note, whatever the latest one is, when it comes out.
Right.
But what happened is that night or the next night, I went to turn my phone off, turn off the Wi-Fi, and plug it in, and I pressed the button to get to the Wi-Fi, and the screen flickered, and then it came back on and more or less was frozen there. I tapped different things. I couldn't get anything to respond. So finally I pulled the battery. I had a new battery I'd ordered to replace because I have a little problem with my current battery. And I put that in, charged it all night, started up the next day. Everything's been working fine, but I'm just wondering,
that's probably not malware. That's just something that happened. That happens all the time, unfortunately. Most of the time, malware does not announce itself. It does not want to be discovered. The only time something bad will happen like that is if the malware is poorly crafted. Of course, malware is often poorly crafted. But malware used to be they were like little teenage vandals, and they would do things to annoy you. But now what they want to do is sneakily get on your phone and send texts to Aruba that cost $15, things like that. That's how they make their money. So
how can we find out for sure that my phone is clean?
Well, you can do the same thing I told Melinda to do, which is wipe it and start over. And it's nice on an Android phone. That's not as big of a chore as it is on, say, Windows. You can, there's a setting in the menu that says reset the phone to factory settings. It'll be just like when you got the Note 4 home for the first time. It'll log you in your Google account. If you've been backing up to Google, which most people do, check and see. Then all your settings are backed up, and all the apps are backed up. Not the apps themselves, but a list of the apps you have installed. And as soon as you log into your Google account, it'll start downloading and reinstalling all your apps. You'll be good to go. It'll be fresh as new. It's not a bad idea to do that anyway. So, but the crash itself could just be a crash. I mean, the phone is older. Android does that anyway. In fact, a number of people have started to complain that the brand new Galaxy S8, I've seen this on the forums, is doing the same thing as rebooting, spontaneous rebooting. I have a HTC U Ultra that I got that does it. And, I don't even know it's rebooting, except that every time, not every time, but many days I'll get up in the morning and turn it on and it says, oh, I rebooted. Enter your password. And then I know, oh, you must have crashed in the middle of the night. So, in other words, nothing to freak out about.
Okay, now, the things you told me to do to check and make sure it's backed up on Google and make sure that...
Go into settings, and you're going to see in the settings there's a backup and reset entry. That's the same place you'll reset the phone from. But if you go to the backup part of it'll say backup to Google, and it's almost certainly checked. If it's not, check it and wait a little bit so it can back up. And it backs up all your key settings.
One time, settings, and then I go to backup and reset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how do I know if I've got that list of my apps?
That's part of what's backed up.
Okay.
One way to verify it is to go to the Google Play Store, and under My Apps in the Google Play Store, the tab that you always see is your installed apps. But if you look, there's also a list of all apps, and you'll see which ones are installed and which ones not. If it has a long list of apps, some you've got installed and some you never installed, or you haven't installed in years or weeks or months, then it has everything.
Okay, and one more last thing, because you mentioned in the past hour, you said... If you have a lookout, Did you say disable it? Because I do have Lookout on my phone.
It's harmless. Lookout's fine. It's just redundant because Google's already doing what Lookout does, which is scan all new apps against a database of known problems.
Okay. And the Google, if I just go with a Google, it has the Find Phone feature?
Ah, that's an interesting question. There, because it's an older phone. What version of Android are you running?
That's a good question.
I'll tell you what. You don't need to find out. See, if you can download and install Android Device Manager, that is a Google app that does the Find Your Phone stuff. But as you know, Samsung has, in fact, truthfully, the Samsung stuff is fine. I would leave it. I would, in fact, make sure you've logged into your Samsung account because Samsung backs up additional settings. And so that'll make it even easier to restore your phone.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. You know what? You've had the phone for 4 years. Not a bad idea to reset it, restore it.
Actually, only two. I kind of waited. I follow your advice on Microsoft. I wait until other people have the problem.
Yeah. That's a great. You know what? That was the last great Note because it had a removable battery. I have a ton of Note 4 batteries. I don't know what I'm going to do with. Maybe I should send them to you. And it had a great battery. You know, our friend, one of our chatters, Dr. Mom, has a Note 4. Hers just recently started overheating. It's at the end of its life cycle, basically. And you're going to soon want to replace it, as you said, with a Note 8. But the Note 8 does have the SD card, thank you, but not a removable battery anymore.
Go on that comment you just made about Dr. Mom. The phone was hotter than usual.
Yeah.
That night.
I wonder what's going on there. I don't know if that's age or Google's done something with Android that is not, you know, great on the Note 4. That's the other thing that forces upgrades is, you know, operating systems move on, but the phones don't. And sometimes using a newer operating system on an older phone can cause problems. I would try this reset thing first, and it may get it right back to factory conditions.
Great. Hey, appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Nice thing about a removable battery is it keeps that phone lasting longer because the battery wears out, but you just put another one in, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. And Val's on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Val.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hello?
I feel bad because we keep people on hold for like an hour, and then they have to leap for the phone.
Yes, hello.
Thank you for your patience. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, it's actually 1 hour, 40 minutes.
Oh, but who's counting, Val? Who's counting?
I know.
I'm sorry. Thank you for your patience.
I'm on speakerphone, actually. Can you hear me well?
That's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, because Hendon actually hates it. Okay, anyway, LiveLock, is it safe or is it bogus?
Yeah. No, it's completely safe. So LifeLock has an interesting and challenging position. LifeLock was created many moons ago to reduce identity fraud. And still, they still claim and work towards that. But they were a little maybe over-aggressive in the early days in their advertising. You remember LifeLock's the one that had the CEO make a billboard with his social security number on it and say, go ahead and hack me, which was, as anybody listening knows, a very bad idea. And he got hacked many, many times. LifeLock also got in. Here's what I think happened. And I think I'm actually correct in this. What LifeLock was doing in the early days was very effective. They were putting fraud alerts on your credit reporting accounts. You know, there's the big credit reporting agencies, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. If you don't know the names of those companies, learn the names of those companies because your entire financial life is held in their hands. They are the ones who give the vendors and merchants and people you want to borrow from and the credit card manufacturers your credit history, your credit report. And, you know, everything's in there, including your date of birth, your social security number, and a lot more. Those credit reports are, you know, they're gold. And in the past, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian probably haven't done the best job protecting those. Worse, they make a lot of money from people who want to send you things like credit card offers. They sell your information to companies. Do you get credit card offers in the mail? Sure you do. Hey, you're good for it. And that's a lot of money for TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. What LifeLock did to protect you is they put fraud alerts on your three credit reporting accounts. When they put fraud alerts, that means that those credit unions cannot issue credit reports in your name without your permission. It means it's hard for you to get a loan, get a new credit card, because you have to go through some rigmarole. But that's what you want, because you don't want the bad guys to get your social somehow, to get your date of birth somehow from some other source, and then apply for a credit card. That's called identity theft. That's when you get in trouble. So that's what LifeLock was doing. Now, as you might imagine, this really put a dent in revenues for TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. So they sued. They actually didn't sue directly. In my opinion, what happened is they, and, you know, there's some evidence for this, but this is, I should say, completely my opinion of it, is they went to state attorneys general and said, you know, this LifeLock, these guys are really claiming way too much. You want to go after them. And so many state attorneys general did, and won court orders against LifeLock. You can find all this online. You can see all these judgments against LifeLock, and very much constrained what they could do. In fact, they prevented them from putting fraud alerts on your credit reporting accounts. Uh-huh. So LifeLock's had to find other ways to do what they do. In fact, they ended up buying a big company that does the back end for most of the credit cards in the country. And that gave them a view on credit cards. And in fact, they sold services back to the credit card companies for fraud. They had put, you know, some pretty hefty computers on all of this data and that analyzed it and were able to, you know, pinpoint prospective fraud. You know, there's always been the story going around that if you want to get your credit card flagged, best way to do it is go to a gas station, buy two tanks, not one tank, but two tanks of gas, then go buy some athletic shoes. Apparently, that's a pattern. Actually makes sense, because who buys two tanks of gas? But apparently, people who steal credit card numbers, that's one of the first things they might do. They go to a gas station, they fill up their tank and their friend's tank, and then they go buy athletic shoes, and that'll instantly, instantly freeze your credit card. Well, that kind of information, and there's a lot more, of course, and more sophisticated patterns they're looking for, but we've all had credit cards frozen. That kind of information is provided by a back-end service. There are several companies that do it, but one of the biggest is owned by LifeLock. And so they use that same kind of information to protect you. They're looking for fraud on your account. So if the credit card company doesn't catch it, LifeLock might. They have, because of these judgments against them from the state's attorneys general, I can't tell you. I've done LifeLock ads in the past, and I am, by the way, a LifeLock customer. I spend $300 a year on a LifeLock protection, for not just for myself, but for my kids, because one big potential is your kid. This is the worst. It's bad enough you get identity theft, but if a kid gets identity theft, their credit can be ruined for life. So when my kids were underage, I made sure that we had this because I didn't want them to have any identity theft problems. Now, does it work? I don't know. I've never had any identity theft. So I guess it's working. Every few, I can't remember if it's monthly or quarterly, I get a report from LifeLock saying everything's good. And I presume if somebody should try to steal my identity, that I would get an email from them, and they would. And then the other thing that they do, and they've been forced in their advertising to really focus on this, is help you remediate it. They'll pay some amount of money, I think, to help you fix if you do get fraud alert, if you do, or rather, credit card fraud, identity fraud. So I feel bad for this company because they made some missteps. There's no question about it. The most famous of which was their CEO giving out his credit card, Social Security number publicly. That was a bad idea. Maybe overstating their capabilities. They're very careful now in their ads not to. And it's been frustrating for me, as I said, when I do ads for them. I want to tell you more, but I can't. They said, no, you can't say that, Leo. Okay. I can say it in this venue. I can say it. It's not an ad. They're not an advertiser right now, so I can say it in this venue. I think they got a raw deal, and I think they provide a service that's very valuable. Do you need it? No. You can do a lot of what LifeLock does, including, by the way, put kind of limited fraud alerts. You'll have to do it every few months on your credit reporting agencies, and I think that's actually a very good idea. I'll put a link in the show notes to an article about the addresses. Many of these, you can do these online. So you can do much of what LifeLock does with the credit card companies. And if you're willing to, you know, read your bill carefully and stuff, I think LifeLock's more of a convenience so that you don't have to do all of that. The fraud alerts, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion don't like them because it means they can't, you know, they say they're not as effective. What it really means is they can't sell your information to people who want to give you a credit card offers and other things like that. That's how they make their money. So I'll put a link in the show notes on an article that walks you through the whole process. You can do everything or almost everything that LifeLock does yourself. It's really a question of, do you want to pay for them to do this or do you want to do it yourself? I personally am happy to use LifeLock. Because I'm in the public eye, I feel like I and my kids are more vulnerable perhaps than, you know, a private citizen. To me, it's worth it. But you'd have to decide if it's worth it for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Let me use the right terms. Fraud alerts, I think, are not available anymore unless there's been fraud. But there's something called a credit freeze. And I'm gonna put a couple of links in the show notes. Clark Howard, who is, of course, on the radio, consumer protection guy, has a very good section on his website on identity theft, how to detect it, what to do about it. He's got all the phone numbers and websites for all the credit reporting agencies, and he talks about credit freezes. I'll also put an article in there for you geek folks from a guy who's highly respected in tech circles on security, Brian Krebs. He wrote a report, or actually quoted a report from the U.S. Public Interest Research Group that said all consumers should request credit file freezes before becoming victims of identity theft. Before. And this is, of course, very controversial with the credit reporting agencies because if credit freeze annoys the heck out of them, and they'll try to charge you for it, they'll make them expire rapidly, sometimes they'll put, you know, restrictions on it. But unless you're actively buying houses and more buying cars and getting loans, getting credit cards, a credit freeze is great because it essentially says, do not issue credit cards in my name. And that stops identity theft cold. I'm going to put a couple of links in the show notes. Everybody should read. This is, you know, identity theft is clearly a widespread problem. It's one of those things that doesn't happen very often, but when it does, boy, are you sorry. It's a pain in the butt, and it can really have long-lasting effects on your financial situation. So you don't want it to happen. And just like malware, it's far better to prevent it from happening in the first place. So these credit freezes, I think, are a good idea. I think LifeLock is a great company to do that. There are others. And you can do it, and I do believe you can do it yourself if you're willing to put the effort in. It's just that it's a lot of effort, and you have to stay on top of it all the time. But we're going to give you the resources to do it yourself. And, you know, this public interest research group was very clear, particularly in the light of all these recent data breaches, which means that it's not unlikely that your name, address, date of birth, and perhaps even Social Security number have been leaked out. You know, companies have this information. And companies like Target are being breached, and that information is leaking out, which means the bad guys have it. And the best protection, you can't really, you know, the problem with using a Social Security number as an identifying number, which should never, ever, ever, ever happen, but does every single time, you know, when you apply for credit, what's the first thing they ask you for? Your social. The problem is that's very hard to change. It's like your fingerprint. And you're now giving out, you know, the keys to the kingdom to some guy on the phone or mailing it or faxing it or worse, emailing it. You should protect your credit card, your Social Security number like it's a credit card number. It's worse because it can be used to get many credit cards in your name. Oh, Lordy. So protect that social. And then, the other side of it is to make it that if somebody does have your name, address, date of birth, and social, they can't get credit cards in your name because there's a freeze on your credit accounts. And that's very effective. Just a lot of work. So these third-party companies are doing it. And as I said, you know, Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, they don't want me to tell you about this. They don't want you to know about it because it's hard for them to make money with a credit freeze in your account. They can't make money on you. Their service is, really helps when people use it. I think it would be very nice if there were a way to, well, you know, someday we'll solve this. We're in a bit of a mess right now, right? Because it was fine to give out your social when before the internet. There was no easy way for bad guys to get it and disseminate it. And the chances of somebody, you know, in Bulgaria getting your social were pretty low. Now, thanks to the internet, it's all over the place. And it's easy. And they can do it anonymously. And, you know, I mean, it's just really, it's a great environment for bad guys. Michael in Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how are you doing today, Leo?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. I have a two-part question. I'm receiving text messages from unknown phone numbers that are leading me to a link. One of my questions...
Whatever you do, do not click that link.
Okay. Now, can they embed a virus through my cell phone?
Well, not currently, if you keep your cell phone up to date, but not so long ago, on both Android and iOS... if somebody sent you a specially crafted image over text using the MMS, not SMS system, but the MMS system, they could crash your phone, and ultimately a crash is the first step to coming up with a hack. So these were very dangerous. This has been patched by Apple and by Google. For a while, the only fix was to turn off automatic reception of MMS messages. But for now... Barring another, you know, security flaw, and there'll be another one. There always is. You're safe. SMS messages by themselves can't trigger anything. And that's a good thing because there's nothing to stop people from sending you SMS messages. Do you ever get calls from scammers on your phone?
That's the second part of the
right. We all...
Numerous calls, and I put a block on them, and...
Doesn't matter. It's epidemic.
Still,
because you can't block the number. They don't use the same number twice. So this is an epidemic that we are suffering right now. The Do Not Call Registry doesn't work because these people don't care about the law. Most of them are not in the United States. The latest thing, which drives me nuts, is they use your area code. You know, these are spoofed numbers. They're not real. The caller ID is spoofed, and they're using your area code. And so you might think, oh, I got to answer this. It could be my kid, or it could be somebody I know. It could be my business. It could be important.
Yeah, I've actually had one where I stood on the phone for about a half hour telling me to send them money so they can send me a check. And right. I go, no, send the money first, and then I'll send you the check. And I kept playing with them and playing with them, but to a point where I got stuck in an elevator and I lost the call. But, you know,
it might be satisfying to do that, but it doesn't slow them down. The Do Not Call Registry doesn't slow them down. Blocking them doesn't slow them down. I noticed that AT&T and T-Mobile and I imagine other carriers are now doing this, are now letting you know possible scam. They're not blocking the call, but they're telling you it's a possible scam. It's basically, it's made cell phones unusable. I don't answer the phone anymore. And text, you know, if they have that phone number, they can text you too. So get ready because that's the next thing. You're going to start seeing a lot of these texts. It's incredibly frustrating. And I'm not sure what the fix is, but I suspect it's much like this situation with the credit reporting agencies. There is a fix, but they're making too much money on it to implement it. Or maybe it would cost too much to implement it. But there's a way to fix this. It's out of control. But good news, sending you a text message is harmless unless you click on it. The problem is, I've even clicked on them. By accident, I got, you know, my son lost his phone. I got a message a couple of days later saying, we found your iPhone. It said, this is Apple. We found your iPhone. Click this link. I did. And fortunately, I had came to my senses and I looked at the address and it wasn't apple.us. It was apple.ru. And I said, oh, that's not the Apple. That's a Russian Apple. It's not real. The next step on that link was to log into your Apple account. So it was clearly what we call a phishing attempt. Phishing attempt is to send you real-looking messages, whether email or text, that persuade you to give up your credentials, your passwords, and so this is not good. This is not good. But I don't know what the fix is. We got to fix it. No, if you're worried about robocalls, NoMo Robo is a service people seem to like. You have to give them your phone number, and it intercepts those calls.
But we got a problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, to Panama City, Florida we go. Mark is on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on.
Well, I've been watching you guys for a while, and it's worth it.
Thank you.
My question, though, as I stated to the person, was I have some buffering problems in my bedroom, and my wireless router is on the other side of the house.
Yeah.
But I also have my house wired. And on this side of the house, I have another router that I've made an access point, I'm pretty sure, that's an Asus. And I can't understand why I'm having so much buffering problems.
So buffering, as you know, comes from running out of bandwidth, not insufficient bandwidth to stream whatever you're streaming. If in order to see video or listen to audio, it makes sense. It's real time, right? You can't, you know, when you're getting email or looking at a web page, if the top of the web page comes after the bottom, not the end of the world. They just assemble the web page and you go on with your life. If the middle of the email comes before the beginning of the email, no big deal. On the other hand, if you're listening to audio or watching video, those bits, those packets have to come in order. And they have to come in a fairly timely fashion, or you won't. You've heard all those weird digital artifacts.
Yeah.
So streamers do something that's like pretty clever. They call buffering. They get ahead by about 30 seconds. It could be varying amount of time, but let's say it's 30 seconds. That way, if a packet arrives out of order or is missing for a little bit, is slow to get here, no big deal. You can continue to go on, but your buffer gets eaten away. And at some point, if you miss enough packets or packets are slow enough or they come out of order enough, buffer disappears. Then you pause the video and rebuffer. You create a new 30-second buffer and continue on. That way the video or the audio is smoothly streamed. And that's why, by the way, if you watch streaming video, it's at least 30 seconds behind the live TV or the live ball game or whatever you're watching.
Yeah.
So when you're getting buffering, that means your bandwidth's not keeping up. And you figured that out. You're off in the distance. Wi-Fi is very much dependent on distance. The farther away, the slower it's going to be. So it's not unusual that you don't get buffering when you're sitting next to the wireless access point, but you do when you're at a distance. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
If you could plug in that computer to the Ethernet port in your bedroom, you probably wouldn't get any buffering. Now, if you did, then that means it's not your internal network, maybe your internet service provider is not fast enough or not consistent enough. And by the way, that can be the case. But if it works fine when you're sitting next to the access point, and I take it does, when you're next to the router, it's fine. The original router, the main router. You don't get any buffering?
I don't get any buffering when I'm next to
the main router, not the secondary one you put in.
Main router, yes.
Yeah.
I don't.
So the problem is, I suspect, this weird topology you've created by putting another router in your bedroom.
Well,
where is it getting its internet from? Is it plugged into the Ethernet?
Yes.
So here's the problem. You have to have a router somewhere deciding what internet address all the devices are getting. And every local area network should have exactly one router, not two, one.
Okay.
Okay? So what you need to do, if this is to work, is the Ethernet in your bedroom needs to be not connected to the cable modem, but to your main router in your living room, wherever that is. That's the one and only router doing routing, sometimes DHCP or sometimes they call it NAT, but it's the one assigning IP addresses. And then the router in the bedroom, it can be connected via Ethernet, the wireless access point, but it has to be in what we call bridge mode. It cannot be doing DHCP.
And that's what it is.
Okay. And are you using the same SSID for it? The same name and password?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. It's possible that your laptop or whatever you've taken into the bedroom is still using the old one. So what you could try, and this would be fine, is a different name. Call it, you know, bedroom.
Yeah.
And join it directly.
Yeah.
And see if that works.
You also want to have a router that will operate on a different channel. This is, by the way, you're doing by hand what these new mesh routers do automatically and do somewhat better, I might add.
Well, that's what I'm contemplating going to a store and buying mesh routers.
Yeah, they're really expensive. Like, they start at $300 for three units, but they solve this problem.
Yeah. But I'd like to have them wired, because since I have wiring throughout my whole house now.
So the Eero's will do that. They have Ethernet ports. You can connect to your Ethernet. And instead of having to worry about bridging and all that, they handle that all automatically. They create one SSID, one wireless name, one Wi-Fi name, and they hand off beautifully. They do all the things that you're trying to do, but they're designed to do it, and they do it without any intervention on your part. So Eero, and they're really – actually, I think a number of these are designed – the Google also will do this, I believe, the Google Wi-Fi, to plug it in. In fact, Eero says, hey, for best results, plug it into the Ethernet wherever you can.
Yeah, and I have Ethernet, probably three or four ports in the living room, a couple ports
perfect
in each bedroom.
Just for, Eero works best if you let it do the routing. So you're going to take all of your other Wi-Fi routers out, let them handle channel assignment, let them handle band assignment, because they're dual band routers, let them handle DHCP, let them do all the work. They work best when you let them do everything.
Yeah.
The Eeros are excellent. And I think exactly what you want. I've used them all, and what I found is really each of them has strengths in certain areas. Like the Orbeez are the fastest and most powerful. The Plumes I like. That's what I'm using at home right now, because I can plug them in to any. Each room has one of its own Plumes. They do have an Ethernet port on each Plume, but I can't remember if that's for in or out. You want it for in, obviously. I know the Eeros work that way. In fact, my friend Stacey Higginbotham, that's how she set up her Eeros. She has Ethernet in many rooms, so wherever she can, she plugs her Eero in, and the Eero just handles that beautifully.
Yeah.
Eero.
All right.
Highly recommended. It's a lot of money, but you know what? Wi-Fi is important, and I'll tell when you don't have Wi-Fi problems, it really that's a wonderful thing. All those problems go away. My wife, you know, honey, the Wi-Fi's out here. Oh man, not getting that, just not that anymore is so great. We haven't. She hasn't complained in months.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, we all do. And because if you're the tech guy in your house, you're the one.
Yes.
Yeah. Works great. Let the Eero do its job, and it does it very well. Hey, I appreciate the call. I should mention a disclaimer, as always, that Eero is a sponsor of some of our podcasts. But as I've said, I've tried them all, and each one has a different. I used the Orbi for a while because it was so fast and powerful, and I've been using the Plume lately. Plume. Plume is an interesting mix because they're less expensive per unit, but you want a unit in every single room. Hey, thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for such a great day today, and Kim Schaffer for putting on some great callers. Thanks to you for putting on the show. Couldn't do it without you. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.